This morning, we're kicking off our value visit with a coding work group session. My name is Kristen Rodriguez. I'm with the Health Plan Alliance. And this is my colleague, Nicole Taranella, also with the Health Plan Alliance. The coding work group session, this is our experiment of doing an in-person version of a meeting that we do virtually about every 6 weeks. And then we do have two folks here, Don and Karen, that'll be presenting two of our case study groupings. And then one of the Health New England staff, Jessica, is actually going to be presenting theirs. Great. Don, yes. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
You're going to be way more exciting than I am.
Hopefully.
Me, yeah, hopefully. Okay, here we go. Everyone's in your packets again or in your packets. The coding packets are there, so follow along. And let's do this.
All right, great job, Kristen.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Hi, everyone in the room. I'm Dawn Peterson from Health Alliance Medical Plans in Urbana, Illinois. I'm the Director of Risk Adjustment for our team. I've got some folks on the phone, and my manager, Doretta, is here, and we'll be presenting later today. We are going to go through three cases that my team has faced in their chart retrieval slash chart review that we would like to get a feel for how other people would code it. So I'm going to provide some, Karen will provide three, and Jessica will provide three. So digging right in, the first medical record, the question here is, would you code the drug-induced neuropathy? So I'm going to give you a few moments to just look through the note. I'm not going to read medical records to you. So look through, see if you can find any information in here that would supply support for reporting that code. Oh, okay, yeah. If you guys would like on the phone to just kind of speak up if you're ready, let us know. I'm kind of looking around the room and people's heads are still down, so I'm just giving it some time for people to have a chance to look. All right, whoever's ready to speak up, your turn.
This is Colleen from Gunnarsson Health Plan, and yes, we would code that due to the fact that it said grade 2 neuropathy, and then it did indicate about the cumulative toxicity that he has. So when we looked at grade 2 neuropathy, that does lead us to chemotherapy-induced neuropathy.
Hello, everyone. This is Jessica at Health New England. To piggyback on that, we also agree that we would capture that grade 2 neuropathy for the toxicity, but we were also questioning whether, where it says they're unsure if it's related to the progressive disease or the treatment toxicity, so we weren't sure whether or not that was a contradicted statement to saying it was due to that.
Yeah, so I can share that this is one of those instances where we would look at it and maybe discuss it potentially to not delete, but not add. The reason why we wouldn't add is because of what Jessica stated with it's kind of unclear, and the doctor says it's unclear if it's related to the progression of the disease or if it's truly due to the toxicity due to treatment. So anyone else? Yes.
This is Jackie with Providence Health Plan, and I looked at that sentence too, but then I thought that I probably would code it because I'm thinking that the unclear part is they're not sure why he's having a continued general decline.
At this point, though, let me ask this. Would any of you go back to the physician and ask them to confirm the diagnosis and get an attestation on it?
Yeah, so that's a great question. When you're doing risk adjustment coding, generally you're looking at charts that could be upwards to like 18 months old. So really going back to the provider, it's a crapshoot. Do they want to go back and you know, amend a note that's 12 months old? Or are they going to look at you like, are you crazy? I've already got payment on this. You're the health plan. No. So we do have medical directors that review charts for us if we're kind of on the fence of, hey, we really want to go back to the doctor, but we'd rather it be a peer-to-peer discussion than a risk adjustment coder going back to the doctor. So that's a great point.
This is Colleen again at Gunnarsson. No, we wouldn't go back to the provider either because we're doing the retrospective chart reviews. So we would not go back to the provider and ask him to re-amend, like you said, years later.
Mm-hmm. All right. Are we ready to move on to the second? Okay. So this note is trying to confirm a diagnosis of COPD. So I'm going to give a few moments again to look through to see if you would code the COPD from this note or not. And please speak up. Those of you that are on the phone, if you're ready to talk, feel free.
This is Jackie Morris with Providence Health Plan, and I would not code COPD in this case due to the statement that was made in the plan. Makes me think that they're still up in the air whether it's COPD versus asthma.
Okay. And I think I misspoke. Would you delete the code? Instead of adding the code, would you delete it?
Oh, yes, I would.
Hi, this is Jessica at Health New England. We agree with Jackie in that we wouldn't have captured it, and we also would take it away, just like she said. Plus, in the HPI, it says she's quit for over 25 years, so it's really, how do we know for sure at this point, is it COPD or is it asthma or is it something else?
Hi, this is Karen from Gunnarsson, and we reviewed this, and we would not have deleted it. It's there in the assessment. We kind of take the stance, like Dawn said, if it's there, we might not have added it, but we're not going to delete it either because it was assessed. So we would have kept it.
And to also piggyback off of that, we would not delete this code. We would not add it, but if you look through the thousands of claims that go through the health system and look at the rate of expectancy with what's going to be picked for a RADV versus your chances of this getting through. At the end of the day, the patient is accruing services related to a condition that we need a premium for. So being on the fence, and we are more conservative, we wouldn't add, but we would just not delete this one. And our coder had mentioned that the doctor is addressing... you know, the patient does have the history of smoking. Smoking is prevalent in the U.S., very much so in our rural areas of central Illinois, and we have docs that will just slap on a COPD without even getting the testing done in pulmonary. So we would leave it.
This is Jess from Health New England, Jess DuPont. Sorry, not the Jess on the phone.
Well, see, I thought you were on the phone. And then
it's very confusing. HR has told me I have to stop hiring people with the same name as me. So I think this is an interesting topic about this gray space between when the documentation would justify an add but doesn't rise to the level of a delete. So when you are sort of confronted with the situation, do you have guidelines, internal guidelines that you follow, or is it a conversation with your team? How do you sort of make that determination
where
it falls?
Our feel is we delete by exception. You should never have more deletes than you have adds. So we actually have a great process that Jaretta has refined this year where we do a second-level review of all deletes. So we have an Excel spreadsheet shared between all nine of our chart reviewers They'll slap the information on the Excel spreadsheet, and then a second reviewer will come in. We were doing the second level reviews like twice a year, but that got to be really hard at the end of the year, so now Jared has instated that they do it right off the bat. So we always have a second level review on the delete, and if that person still feels that it needs to be deleted, we take their word for it. Yep. Would anybody like to add anything?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Don. So I'm just my question is, you guys said that you wouldn't add it, but you wouldn't delete it. So if you sent this to CMS during a RADV, this is your only record, you'd feel confident that they would accept this.
We're fighting it.
You're fighting it.
If the first person doesn't accept it, we're hoping the second reviewer accepts it.
So on your second review, mm-hmm. is that one designated person within your group that does all second level reviews? You guys kind of alternate that and just say, hey, I think this should be deleted. Mm-hmm. Coworker one, will you look at this to see?
Yep.
If they disagree, what happens then?
Then it's escalated to Jaretta.
Okay.
Our manager.
And Jaretta has fine. Okay.
Yeah. And then if Jaretta needs help, she'll come to me. Yeah.
So basically, your first level is kind of like they suppress it, say, hey, I think this is a delete, but I'm not going to put it in for a delete, and then we'll have the second person.
We actually had to stop that because we had people putting things on the list where they were like on the fence and unsure. We needed to make them more confident in themselves of, you know, don't make it a delete unless you really, truly feel it's a delete.
And do you ask them on that spreadsheet, do you say, give me the reason why?
Okay. Yes. Yeah, they have to put a comment in as to why they're deleting it.
Sorry, lots of questions.
No, so that's great.
The other thing is, what have you noticed with the second level? Do you, a lot of times, still go with deleting them or
yes.
not?
Yes. So in the beginning, and I would say this is when we first started the spreadsheet, it was about half and half because a lot of people were using it as a, I don't know, I don't want to make the decision. But as we trained them and coached them to kind of get more confident in their decisions of delete by exception, it got better. And I would say that the majority we delete. Good conversation. Good questions.
Hi,
Jason.
This is Sharnice with Health Plan. And so we have a process in place where we have what we call a help please function. So when we're like on the fence, whether we should code it, delete it, we kind of query our lead or one of the coders to just take a look at the record and review it and just get a second opinion. But before we get to that point, we try to, you know, ask the colleagues that around us for their opinion just to get another insight. But for this one, I would not delete it. I'm with everyone else. I wouldn't delete it, but I wouldn't add it either. I would certainly try to look at the data service after that PST has been completed, but I did look at the med list. I try not to code from the med list because we don't know when those are updated, but it did make me feel a little better knowing that they did list Ventolin, so I know that there's something that's going on or that may have gone on. So I would not delete it, but I would not add it.
Thank you. And that does, that brings up another piece. So we keep delete separate from a coder query. So we do have another process where, and again, this was just Jaretta's idea this year too, is another way to where if a coder is kind of on the fence on, I don't know what to do. I don't know if I need to confirm it, add it, I'm not sure. And that one is added to the spreadsheet and then someone else takes it and looks at the documentation and then gets on the phone or link and talks with the coder. Our coders do work from home. We have a lot of remote coders. That's why we have so many different lines on today. So they try to communicate and kind of use each other's experience with coding to get to the right answer. Behind you.
for your coders, are they all certified in HCC, or do they just have a general certification? And are they all full-time, or do you use part-time, or how does that work?
That's great. A great question. You should join us on Friday when we go over our org chart, but I will tell you. Every coder is certified. We do have a program for new people in the industry, so that doesn't mean you can't get hired if you're not certified. We give them a year to get certified, and that's either through AHIMA or AAPC. We'd like it to be coding. Coding in general is fine, but we do have coders that have challenged themselves to become HCC certified. AAPC just came out with that, 2 years ago. So we did offer a period of time where we would even fund them getting certified for the first year if you want to test it out, see how it is. We do have one coder that is her certification. She is just an HCC certified coding analyst. We also have coding consultants that work with physicians. We expect them to have the general certification and not just the HCC certification, because a doc's going to throw any type of question at you. It could be CPT, it could be HCPCS, and they really need that general coding knowledge.
Are your coders like have background of being nurses, or are they just actually people that went into the coding realm?
They're actually people that have gone into the coding realm. We won't turn a nurse away, but in our hospital side, we are integrated. Our hospital side has nurse, they have CDI, but also their manager's a nurse, which is great. But all of our folks are generally billers turned to coders.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Dawn, this is Colleen from the Gunderson Health Plan. How many members do you have that you have these coders that are coding for?
So are you talking how many lives does Health Alliance
yes.
have? Okay, so our lives, we have roughly 50,000 commercial and
okay.
roughly, 23,000 for Medicare Advantage.
And then how many coders do you have?
We have 9 coding analysts, and we have 3 coding consultants. 2 of the coding consultants are in Illinois, 1's out in Washington State with that plan. We are definitely an in-house program. We also have nurse practitioners.
Right.
We have a very high-risk case management program, so we're one of few that keeps everything in-house. So, all right. Are we ready to move to the third? Kristen's telling me yes, so let's go. So the third one is, would you code the chronic viral hepatitis C? As we all know, hepatitis C has become very costly over the last few years. So the accuracy in coding here is very important. If you are not at your health plan targeting this set of diagnosis codes, I urge you to, just to make sure that you have the right code, because not everything picks up an HCC. So is anybody ready to give their thoughts?
This is Sharnice with Health First Health Plan. I would not code this. It's listed in the PMH, but in the encounter diagnosis, they list this as a history of. They don't state it as chronic, and I could not find a drug listed for this diagnosis. So I felt there was not enough meat to code that as chronic.
Hello, this is Jessica from Health New England. We agree with that finding as well. We didn't find there was enough information to code that, especially with the chronic, and it's only listed in the past medical history.
Hi, this is Kari Pace from Medical Associates Health Plans. I am also in agreement with what Jessica just stated.
This is Karen from Gunderson. I guess we have a different opinion on this. When we reviewed it, we have it in the assessment that's history of. He also mentions that it's stable. So to me, it looks like he is actually assessing the condition. I don't think hepatitis C really goes away once you contract it. So we would have coded that.
I agree with the last caller.
along with Karen on that. This is Colleen from Gunderson. It does say that he's going to follow up with the doctor on the labs and biopsies who he's being treated with for the hepatitis C. So that was another reason we felt like he's being seen for it.
Hi, this is Kelly at Paramount. We agree that it should be coded because the doctor does address it. He does say that he's stable. And we would also try to look for a note from Dr. B just to see what his results were.
So we are tied. Three no's and three yeses. So that just goes to show you how much you are depending on your coders and your, you know, objectability of the documentation. So Jaylene was the one that popped in from Health Alliance, so that's why I didn't have to say anything on that. Yes. So that is that's it for me.
So you would have coded it.
We would have coded it. Yes. Yes. So, yes.
And I see. I really think what you're seeing here today is because, like you said, you have the first review, second review. But when you look at the CMS RADV audits, this is exactly why they put in the dual process. They have their first set of, you know, folks review it. And then what gets lifted to the second ones is where, you know, it's coming back against the plan. And then they really try to tighten that up. And sometimes, you know, they go ahead and reverse their first set of coders and let things go through. So once again, as you can see, it's very subjective on knowledge, how you're reading and interpreting the charts. So I think these are all great quality points you're making today.
Thank you. Yep, I agree. When you get it overturned, it feels so good. So I think you're up, Karen.
Okay, so my name's Karen Jensen from Gunderson Health Plan. The three cases that we have today are actually three notes that were rejected from our past IVA audit. So it's not really a question of would we add it or delete it. It was three that didn't pass. These diagnoses were what was coded by the physician. We're not 100% sure that they shouldn't have passed, but we could go either way. So we wanted to know kind of everybody's opinion on these. So the first one that I have, it's a 12-year-old girl, so she's not an adult. They coded it with a diagnosis of 74729. It's an aneurysm, a sinus, Valsalva, and they actually use the congenital code. So that's basically the difference. So if you use the congenital code, it's an HCC, and our IVA auditors did not see it that way. So kind of wondering what everybody's opinion is on that.
Hi, this is Jessica at Health New England. So when we looked at this, we were thinking it wouldn't be congenital, and we were kind of up in the air only because the congenital disease that it looks like they're saying the patient has is the Ehlers-Danlos, which the mother also has. So that to us looked like it was congenital, but we were unsure that this condition that they have right now would have been congenital.
Okay. Anybody else have any opinions on this one? It's kind of a hard one.
This is Colleen from Gunderson. I guess on our thought, when we were looking at this, why we thought it would pass is being that it is a child, and then she does have the congenital condition of the Ehlers syndrome, that the sinus of Valsalva is related to that. When you look at that up there, those are conditions that are related that a person could have. So we took it, the provider coded it as congenital. They thought it was congenital. Of course, this is the only documentation we have, but we thought it should have been sufficient enough to pass.
What was the rationale from the FDA?
That they couldn't assume, it didn't say congenital, so they didn't think it could be coded that.
it looks like another doctor diagnosed it, and this doctor is just, I think, yeah? Yep, thanks. So I think because the other doctor diagnosed it, it looks like the note's from June. Did that other doctor diagnose it in the calendar year? Can we go back and look to see if we can find that other note? If not, this is one of those cases where we would probably leave it alone.
Right. And that, yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it didn't pass.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And see, that's just it. It's just a matter of opinion of your IV, your auditor, too. So.
Right. Okay. So did it go to second level at your IVA or first level?
So our IVA doesn't really, well, we appealed it, and then, of course, it just was reviewed by our senior coder. And she came back, and they said, no, it's staying as it is.
That would be a good one to watch through the SBA.
If it was selected for the SBA. Oh. I don't think, know for sure if this one was.
Okay.
So, yes. But, yeah, you're right. It would be interesting to see. Okay, but if we want to go on to the next one. So the next one that we have is there a note, does it contain enough information to code the I-6995, the hemiplegia and hemiparesis? So this, again, was another one that didn't pass. The auditors coded it with just other sequela of other cerebrovascular disease. When we look at the note, though, it does say that the patient does have partial paralysis involved the right upper and lower extremities. And so we thought that that was enough to assume the hemiplegia. Now, again, this is what our physician coded it. They coded it with the hemiplegia.
This is Jaylene with Health Alliance, and I would not have used the hemiplegia for the fact he does not state it.
Okay.
A lot of times I see him where they put muscle weakness, and they'll put hemiplegia, you know, after a CVA. And so, no, on the hemiplegia, hemiparesis, I make sure that they say it. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Colleen from Gunderson. So I'm not sure who the last caller was, but in the exam portion of the physical exam, it does say partial paralysis. So would you look at that to code the hemiparesis?
I would look at it, but without the doctor saying hemiplegia, no, I would not take it.
Okay.
Anybody else have any opinions on this?
Hi, this is Jessica at Health New England. We also would not take that because it wasn't stated, and I want to say the guidelines actually say that word has to be used.
Okay. So would you guys have removed it?
Yes.
You would have, okay.
Health New England would have removed it as well.
This is Amy from Select Health. I just wanted to point out that if you do have a note that states weakness due to CVA, and you look that up in the index of the coding book, that does lead you to a code that risk adjusts, but it would need to say weakness due to the stroke.
This is Jackie Morris with Providence Health Plan. We use coding clinic a lot, and we had found a coding clinic that was from first quarter 2015 that talked about if the weakness is unilateral and clearly documented as being associated with a stroke, it's considered synonymous with hemiparesis, hemiplegia. So we would have coded it based on this coding clinic guideline.
Good to know. Anybody else have anything, or do they want to go on to the next one? So the next one, this one was coded by the physician 304.90, unspecified drug dependence. And the reason why it was coded on one of the last pages, when in the hospital course, they said that she has chronic narcotic use. And then when you look under the recommendations on number 5, it says consideration of pain rehabilitation with tapering and discontinuation of the narcotic. And so when you look up anything for just narcotic drug use, you get that code. And so our IVA auditors actually didn't code it at all. They just left it off, and they did not think that that should be coded. Anybody have any opinions on this one?
I think you stumped him, Karen.
Hi, this is Jessica at Health New England. So we would have captured it because when we did look up like the narcotic use, it did lead us to the dependence code unspecified. And because it looks like they were going to have them taper down off of it, there was a plan established for it. So we would have had that on the claim.
Yep. We thought this was a slam dunk, actually, and it didn't pass. So.
This is Dawn from Health Alliance. Sorry, we would probably have our medical director take a look at this with us and get his recommendation because use and dependency. There's kind of that gray area with that, and you know, the people that are taking these kind of medications. I mean, the likelihood of maybe having dependence is higher, but not everybody becomes dependent, so it's kind of that gray area.
I think I remember when I look in the directory, I think it's actually narcotic use is what you look up, and that's the code you get.
This is Jess from Health New England, Jess DuPont. I know you and Jason had a side conversation. Are you willing to share with the group who your IVA auditor was?
Sure.
Okay. I know we're going to have a conversation, but I think it's, you know, this is a challenge, right, that we have all these different auditors and this is a real issue, right? That they're all reviewing in a different way, but yet there's serious financial implications to it. So,
And for you on the call, we had Advent Advisory.
And is this, are you changing?
Yes, we are. Anybody else? If not, we can go on to Health New England.
Right, so Jess, I need a microphone.
So Jess from Health New England on the line. So you're up, and then you'll just want to be really sure that you speak really loud and clear over your phone for us, okay?
Will do.
Great.
Hello. So this is Jessica from Health New England. And our first case study that we're looking at has to do with a couple of questions, one with diabetes with renal manifestations and diabetes with neurological manifestations, and both were coded as uncontrolled as well. So we were questioning whether or not either of those two codes should have been coded and whether or not it would have been coded as uncontrolled. So basically looking at it, we wouldn't have coded the renal manifestations, one, because we didn't see any meat that was provided for the chronic kidney disease that's mentioned. We only found meat for the diabetes. And as for the neurological, we were kind of on the fence about this. We wouldn't have added it, but we wouldn't have taken it away.
Okay.
Any reactions from folks on the line or anyone in the room?
I guess, this is Colleen from Gunderson Health Plan. I guess we would not have removed either one of them if they were coded. In the plan, it does say he has the diabetes with the renal complications, and then he had the lab done, the microalbuminuria, and then as well as the peripheral neuropathy. I guess our standpoint would be we wouldn't actually delete it off of there if it was coded.
Right. As Colleen said, we decided we wouldn't have deleted it. We don't necessarily know if we would have added it if it wouldn't have been coded, but we would not have actually removed it.
This is Dawn from Health Alliance. So the good thing about this example is that both codes drive to the same HCC. So really, it's one of those situations where you got them both, definitely no deletes, one's there, you only get paid once. So really, we probably wouldn't spend too much time on it.
That's a good point. It never even occurred to me that they were with the same HCC.
Me either.
Hi, this is Kelly from Paramount, and we agree with the last caller that as long as one is supported, you really wouldn't have to support the other one.
This is Kari Pace from Medical Associates Health Plans. I also agree with that statement.
All right, Jess, want to go to number two?
This is Amy from Select Health, and I just wanted to say that I definitely think that the diabetes with neuropathy is supported. I would have coded that.
All right. Thank you, everyone. That's good feedback. We appreciate it. So the next case study we have is malignant neoplasm of the prostate, and so we were questioning whether or not anybody else would code for current prostate cancer or if they would code for the history of the malignant neoplasm. From what we were looking at the note, we were leaning towards we actually captured the current prostate cancer.
Hi, this is Sharnice with Health First Health Plan, and I would totally take that as current because it does discuss the Lupron injection, and he actually did have the treatment on that date of service. So as long as there is an active treatment, I would code that as an active instead of a history of.
Hi, this is Kelly from Paramount, and we also agree. Since he's still being treated for it, we would code it as an active instead of a history code.
This is Jaylene with Health Alliance, and I would have coded it as active because of the Lupron injection as well.
This is Julie with Gunderson, and we would have coded it as current, also still on current therapy, so still as active.
Any other feedback, I guess I can move on to case three. So back to cancer, though, we would have captured it as well. It just seemed like there was a little bit of conflicting information, but we did capture it. So case study three, we captured history of a DVT, whereas the provider captured a current DVT. And some of the reasons were that we didn't capture it. It looks like it was a post-op DVT. It doesn't look like they're still being treated for it. So we were just wondering what anybody else would do on this case.
This is Julie with Gunderson. We would agree with that.
This is Kim from Select Health, and I agree with that. There was no indication of it currently being treated.
Can I also ask a question? How... sometimes we're always up in the air at Health New England in regards to when we would capture the current DVT versus capturing the history of. We're just wondering if anybody else has any other guidelines in regards to how long would you capture the DVT as current, say if they were in the hospital and then they came in for a follow-up visit, would you consider that still a current DVT, or what would you be looking for in the note to still be capturing that as current?
This is Kim from Select Health, and after doing a lot of research on this, it needs to indicate that when it's first diagnosed and for the first reason when they first diagnose the DVT is when it should be coded, and the, or if it states chronic, because that does risk adjust as well if it's a chronic DVT.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you very much.
This is Jackie with Providence Health Plan. We don't really have any kind of guidelines regarding time frame that we go by, but one thing that's interesting is that the default code is the acute one, but we really try to pay attention to the physician documentation as to how it's actually worded. Like in this record, everything they talk about is like past tense, that you know, he had a post-op DVT and so on. So I wouldn't code it in this case.
Any other notes or comments on this last case study from Health New England? And Jess, did we get them all? Did I count three?
Yes, those were three of them, yep.
Just making sure I can count. All right, sweet. We do have a few more minutes to this call, so I just want to open it up for the folks on the line. If anyone had, and folks sitting here who are waving at me. Okay, hold on. So general.
This is Jason with Select Health. So for those in the room and also on the phone, we've had a lot of discussions within our group about how much focus we should put on RX-HCCs versus Part C HCCs. From my understanding, usually a RAD-V is only dealing with Part C. So we have not put a lot of focus on RX-HCCs, but are interested in what kind of the group... kind of what do you guys do? Do you focus on RX-HCCs, or if you come across them, you could add them, but most likely we don't delete RX-HCCs from that standpoint from the RAD-V, but interested in what others do.
Health New England team on the phone, can you speak up on this?
Hi, it's Stephanie from Health New England, and our last audit that we did, our last retrospective Medicare audit that we did, we actually added way more RX-HCCs. We found more evidence of RX-HCCs than we did actual HCCs. And our theory here is they may be small, but they are mighty.
Yeah, so just a little more context on that. At the mid-year, we actually, for the first time in our Medicare history, saw a payment retraction related to Part D, and that scared the bejeebus out of us. So we put a renewed focus on really looking at RX-HCCs. That coupled with the fact that we were really struggling with this last go-around to find things that we could add. Historically, like Jason had mentioned, we've stayed away from them mostly because our physicians have pushed back. They just don't want to be bothered with talking about them. They don't feel that they have enough sort of weight to rise to the top of their attention. But I really do believe, and the numbers are still shaking out, that adding the number of RxHCCs back in that were justified is going to help mitigate some of the deletes that we had to pass through, because we did have some serious issues with just unsubstantiated codes that required retractions this go around.
Hi, this is Toretta, Health Alliance Medical Plans. We definitely do pick up our HCCs, our ex-HCCs. We do add them. As Jason said, we're following in that same suit. We do not delete them. Definitely find it beneficial to add them, though.
Just real quick, and I apologize for the people over the airways, but how many people in the room for your plans actually just do everything internal versus using an external vendor to help you out? So basically all internal so far. How many external? Okay, a couple. All right. And for the ones that are doing an internal reviews, did you ever try vendors, and did you feel that doing it yourself was a more productive or a more safe risk mitigation approach?
This is Jess from Health New England. Predating me taking over the risk adjustment department, it's my understanding that we did use a vendor in the early days when we were trying to get our risk adjustment strategy in place. And ultimately, there was a tremendous amount of upcoding that happened on the part of the vendor that required us to disclose to CMS a major compliance issue and retract millions of dollars worth of added diagnosis codes. So that was our first and only experience, and I think that is still burned into the brains of our executive leadership. So it is unlikely that we will go the route of farming it out anytime in the near future.
So this is Jason with Select Health. So we've had similar experiences that Jess did. I think the biggest thing for us is with vendors is they do a great job. And we actually are going to do, we actually have already contracted with a vendor to do natural language processing review. But the bottom line to me is who gets the final say. And a lot of the times vendors do the final say. And we saw that through our past vendor, they would submit stuff. We would do some sample audits after the fact. It had been submitted to CMS, and in turn, we sent in a lot of deletes or retractions because of that. So I think that kind of goes with, and we'll talk, I think, more about vendors in this visit, but I think that really goes with the ownership of the health plan, that who gets to make that final decision. And as long as we can make that final decision, then we're okay with using vendors to do chart reviews, as we will going forward.
So I'm going to shift gears real quick, if you don't mind. This may be for a later conversation, but can anyone share some of their numbers from the IVA in terms of error rate, number of claims, number of records, that type of thing?
If you don't mind hanging tight on that, that's okay. Literally the next session.
Perfect.
Is that okay?
Thanks. Yep.
Okay. Other general comments or questions? Or anyone on the line? Was anyone saving any questions for your coding peers for today's call?
Hi, this is Sharni with Health First. I do have a question about, we discussed the prostate cancer as active with the Lupron injection. So for us, we only code it as active if they're receiving the Lupron injection on that date of service. Is there anyone that does it differently? And if so, can you give a reasoning as to why?
This is Dawn from Health Alliance. We do have a very rigorous definition of active cancer versus history of. We have a pretty big cancer center within our owner hospital. So we had to tie down that definition pretty tight to get them on board with working with us. So as far as the prostate cancer, that is, it seems like that's like a topic of discussion every single IRR that we do. And I purposely like did not put 185 in my examples. So we have, our medical director helped us with this definition. And you're always going to have that patient that's 87 years old, they're done, they don't want to do treatment, they don't want the Lupron, but they still have active cancer if they have a diagnosis of cancer, and we should still, you know, be reporting that as active. So the definition that we use is either active disease or active treatment, and I think that just goes across the board for any cancer.
Thank you.
Other questions, comments, topics of discussion? We got one hand up in the back of the room over here.
So with the advent of a lot of technology that's come into the coding process, like NLP, OCR, computer-assisted coding, are you guys finding it a lot easier in terms of reducing a lot of the errors specific to RADV, IVA going forward, both for adds and deletes? Or is anybody using coding technology?
We're not.
This is Jason with Select Health. Yeah. We did a pilot with a vendor to kind of evaluate their, you know, their accuracy and productivity. And due to that, and actually what we had them do was review same records that were reviewed by a previous vendor to see if they kind of followed the same coding guidelines. I think that's one of the biggest things, too, as you can tell from the discussion today, that every health plan kind of has their different coding guidelines. And if you have a vendor who has very different coding guidelines than you, that needs to be a serious discussion with them. Now, I'm saying that personally because we've learned from past experience that that would be something to look at. But as long as they follow kind of the same coding guidelines, this pilot we ran, so basically what we did is we took one of our internal coders and did what our current process is with the same amount of records that we gave to the vendor. And the reason I wanted to do that is I wanted to see, one, how the accuracy was, and also time, productivity, what was faster. And clearly we saw that vendors do increase because of natural language processing or other things. Their productivity was quite a bit faster, and their accuracy was the same as ours. So I think it's something that health plans should always continue to evaluate and look at. But you do have, I think, some organizations where they do not want to use vendors for everything. They want to build the staff in-house, which I think is fine. We're kind of on both sides that we have our internal staff, but also we're not opposed to using outside vendors if they can follow our guidelines.
So I think the question is more specific. That there's a number of platforms out there that support coding, not from the vendor side, but from just the coding perspective that plans are using today. So that's kind of the question that I was trying to get to. So if you are using OCR, NLP, computer-assisted coding, you know, specifically to RADV or IVA, and you can adjust the your coding guidelines, you know, are you seeing improvement, or are you seeing the opportunities to reduce your RADV, IVA exposure?
I'm not sure if this directly answers your question, but I'll throw it in case it does help. Previously, I worked at Humana, which would use natural language processing after the coders had reviewed, and it was used a lot like the suspect identification system. And the idea was, okay, there were still some things that were left after the coders reviewed it, so NLP came through, and they would then bucket the charts into one through five tiers. One meaning we have a very high confidence, there's still an add in this chart. Two, the confidence is a little bit lower. Five, confidence is even lower yet. Now, we would never rely on the NLP coding to actually submit it, but then we would have our coders re-review. And the NLP was done in-house by some data scientists, and it averaged an additional return of about $10 million in Humana's Medicare Advantage business. So that was kind of how it was used at one other health insurance plan.
Other comments, questions, discussion topics? Anyone on the line got other questions? Hopefully everyone on the line is still there. I got a weird alert on my screen. Oh, good. Everyone's still there. Good. Okay. Great. All right. Well, this is what we're going to do. Everyone physically here with me in the room, just hang tight. I'm just going to dismiss these guys, but then we'll do something else. So for the folks on the phone, you're going to win back some time. For everyone in Select Health and Providence, you guys can go back to bed. Yeah. The West Coast people joined us for this call. Like, wrap your heads around that, everybody. That's pretty cool. So we did take attendance, and just, you know, one more note on the CEUs. I'm going to have Carrie here on our team email out the certificates. Probably tomorrow will be the time frame. So if you don't get an email from the Alliance by the end of the week with a certificate, it just means that I missed you on roll call. So you can email Nicole Terranella or me, and we'll get you the certificate. So don't panic. But give us until, you know, close of business Friday, and if you don't get it, then shoot us a note. So for everyone on the call, thank you so much. I really appreciate the engagement, and we'll talk with you all very soon on the next coding work group.